A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ooh.
Hello and welcome to Brett and Cliff's Flea Circus. My name is Cliff.
Hello, and I'm Brett.
And apparently,
we've just been startled.
According, we were startled there, weren't we? According to a lovely robot lady, I think, when we pressed record there, let us know that this meeting has been recorded instantly after I pressed the recording button. Maybe it was more for you than me, Brett, in case it was subterfuge.
Do you think? I think that might be the case, actually, because it got us to press the button. Do you want to continue? Of course I do.
Did it?
But it did
imagine
start.
If you said no.
That's just the end.
The worst episode of this. Or some might say, my fans might say the best.
I don't think either of me or you have fans, Cliff, to be honest. I'd like to think so.
How's your week been? Do you want, before we get into it, do you want a bird update?
Go on then. Let's see how it's going.
We went to a hotel for two days. I went to a hotel for 2 weeks, came back, and they had taken over the house. Came back after 2 days and just vanished.
The plane. They're playing with you, these birds, aren't they? Messing with your mind.
The eggs are gone, not falling on the floor, not hatched, obviously, because that wouldn't have happened in that time. Just gone.
Where do you think they put them? That's the thing. I mean, it's just so mysterious, isn't it?
That's what's been on my mind all for the last week.
Are there those birds with the massive sort of things underneath their
pelicans
mouth? Yeah, pelicans.
Yeah, there's a couple of pelicans.
living there, and they keep the eggs in the, I don't know what you'd call it, a sheath.
I think it's just their chins.
Our chins. Birds don't have chins, man.
Well, these ones do.
Nah, not even pelicans
I've
have
told
chins.
You what they are. They're shit pigeons.
I know, but now I'm starting to think that they're pelicans.
They're doves, but instead of being a lovely, beautiful white dove, they're the colouring of a pigeon. Has anything happened to you this week?
There's a couple of things have happened. Yeah, I got a new job, so that's good.
I know we've already discussed that you can't talk about it, which makes it sound more intriguing than it is.
Yeah, it's like Fight Club. That's what it is. It's a job in Fight Club. So that was good.
That is very good. I'm very happy for you.
Thank you. It was my son's birthday yesterday, and that was destroyed by Sunderland, which we talked about a little bit before we started the program. But that was the thing about my son's birthday was my sister, who is a mad woman, put on Facebook. Lennon isn't even on Facebook, but she put this on Facebook. Happy birthday, Lennon. And she put a picture on, and it was a picture of my other son. Not
his. Did she do it on purpose?
No. I'm sure that's Jack. And she was like, no, it's 100% Lennon. 100%.
They don't look like each other that much. Like, they're not identical, you know what I mean?
They're not identical. So I tagged Jack, and he went, yeah, that's definitely me. So she got the wrong person. So well done. She corrected her mistake, though. So that was good.
Well done, Stacey. At least that counts. I don't know why I'm having a go at you.
Exactly. We should all do that. Just put a picture of random people. Oh, when just it's your birthday.
Picture, Jack. Happy birthday, whoever it is.
just Jack. That would be good. I painted a roof yesterday.
Like a house?
Yeah, well, see, no, ceiling. Okay, I painted very different. Ceiling. It is very different. See, I'm no good with ceilings or roofs.
How is it? But, is it finished? Is it the colour you wanted it to be? Have you done all of it? You've not missed bits?
I don't think I've missed any bits. I think I did
quite
well. Is
it the one above you right now?
It is. I'm looking
up. I notice you're looking up.
Longingly. So, because I was at work yesterday, but I painted it before I went to work, and I found myself literally having to watch paint dry, right? Because I had to give it a second coat. So I went downstairs and I made myself a sandwich. And the mother-in-law always has the telly on. And it was this morning that was on. And I was just making me sandwich and stuff like that. And it was on in the background. And all I could hear was Philip Schofield shouting at the television going, "Why have you, my friend, made us wait?" It was like some competition or something like that. Someone had rung in. "Why have we had to ring you back? You must have, you need to have a really, really good excuse for why we've had to ring you back. We've had to move the cameras and everything." And then this bloke on the phone went, "Oh, I'm really sorry. My wife's got motor neuron disease. I've had to look after her." And his face just dropped. And this bloke, to make it worse, went, "Well, Philip, I apologise to you and the nation." It's one of those wonderful moments where you catch a bit of car crash television in the background.
What do you think of Philip Schofield?
Well, I'm not sure after that.
I don't like him.
You know, as a kid, you don't like him.
Yeah.
Why?
I think he takes himself very seriously, considering he presents a stupid television program that would daft people on talking about pointless stuff.
Well, that's it. I mean, he took this competition incredibly serious, and it was just ridiculous. And the segment after that was where they had to guess what the invention was. Like, what? It's just completely stupid.
That's what I mean.
Do you know what I mean?
He does stuff like that. He'll be interviewing someone. He'll look really seriously at them, and he'll like try and get under the skin, like he's Paxman or you know someone like that. And then you've got fucking Gino De Campo on next, like fucking like making them laugh with his saucy ways, like
nicking people's guitars. And I saw something else. I don't know how true this is, but it's on the internet and stuff like that. Did you hear about the Chinese businessman that bought like a second division?
Have you seen the clip? Have you seen his highlights reel today?
Yeah, I've seen it. If anybody doesn't know, this businessman bought a second division Chinese club and insisted that the play's 20 Stone's son. Wonderful. And he had to wear the number 10.
He was number seven.
Oh, he's number seven.
I watched the highlights today, and to be honest, he plays a lot like me, and he looks a lot like me in his tight strip. Not only was he number seven and playing because his dad made them play him, he takes all of the set pieces.
And he had the audacity to do that thing where you put one hand up.
One hand
up. To indicate where you put it.
As if he was going to like plug it on his head or something.
He's going to be precise with his corner. It's going to the front post, this one. Oh, I just thought that was mental.
And we're not here to talk about that stuff.
No, we're not, are we? Well, all we're here to talk about, because your pick this week.
It is my pick this week, and I haven't asked you what you think of it, but I know in my mind what you're going to say.
Right.
I picked this week the 1970 film Deep End, starring Jane, the lovely Jane Asher.
The lovely, lovely Jane Asher. Yes.
And it's a bit of a end of the 60s, end of a swinging 60s London vibe about it. About a young lad who starts working in swimming baths, who is shown the ropes by Jane Asher's character, Susan, who's worked there for a long time. And basically she says, "Women come in, I'll give them to you." Because it's like a bathhouse, not just a swimming bath. And you can be their attendant. I'll be the bloke's attendant. They'll want us to do weird stuff, but they'll give you a tip. So just get on with it.
We'll give you a tip for it. They certainly will.
And then
and there's also a hint. Sorry, Myth. There's also a hint at part of the film where they do actually switch as well,
mm-hmm.
where sometimes he attends to the men mm-hmm. and she attends to the women, if that's what they want.
Yeah, if that's what they want, that's what they say. Yeah, mm-hmm. Anything goes. And Soho in the end of the 60s, and he ends up becoming obsessed with her, uh-huh. and the story unfolds.
It does. Yes. Yes, I enjoyed this. I thought it was good.
Good.
I didn't know if you thought I would enjoy it or whatever. But yeah, I did like it. It's like surreal and part mm-hmm. of it, like a dream
yep.
at times, aren't it?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a weird film. It's a very strange one. But like I say, I did enjoy it. Jane Asher, I think, is really, really good. She's yep. excellent and obviously beautiful as well.
Yeah.
I think the guy's all right. It's Mr. Mulder, isn't it? That's his name, that guy.
Yeah.
John Mulder Brown.
Yeah.
Who's actually in a Hammer film, which I really like, called Vampire Circus.
So okay.
I've seen him before. But yeah, it's good. But obviously, my favourite person in this is Diana Dawes, because she's just wonderful.
Yep, she is fantastic. And her bit is fantastic.
The best
as well.
Bit.
So it is very, very good.
It is.
So it's a Polish director. Have you got his name? Do you mm-hmm. want to attempt it?
Yeah, he's called Jerzy Skolimowski.
Yeah,
and I think I've got that right.
Yeah, I think you have. And he's a former he's worked with Polanski in the early 60s in Poland, which mm-hmm. I assume at that point Polanski was okay. And then like Polanski, he came to England in the mid 60s because Poland's regime was not really yeah. that welcoming to avant-garde filmmakers. so they both came to England to try and stretch their creative mm-hmm. muscles a little bit more than they could in Poland. Polanski, mm-hmm. definitely more successful.
Yeah, definitely.
His films were more successful. Uh-huh. This guy, not really. This is the only film I've seen of his, and I think it's regarded as his best. But also one that wasn't massively acclaimed and kind of ended up being undiscovered. It came, they did a restoration project in about 2012 mm-hmm. When mm-hmm. they restored it and restored its colors and did a new remastering of it, but all that time between 1970 and then, it was kind of gone. I can't remember when I saw it. I assume it's around that time. It must have been
when it was re-released,
must have been like around that time, and it was put on Channel 4 or something like that, BBC.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit similar to the film that we did last week, isn't it? Deathline, that it's a bit of a lost film.
If nothing else, seeing that old-style swimming baths and bathing mm-hmm. house is quite good, you know, like the old building and the old Victorian-style thing.
The greens and stuff in there.
The white tiles and all the valves and that stuff. Uh-huh. But even in this, it's kind of decaying, isn't it? There's, in fact, they're going through they're doing it up. There's always someone mm-hmm. painting something in the background, painting the walls and stuff like that, because it's in a bit of disrepair.
And there's a couple of sort of scenes where they seem to be sitting. It looks almost like a building site, doesn't it? Where they're having their sandwiches and stuff like that. So it's very, very run down, as you said, for sure. But like I say, really enjoyed it. I like the music as well. The music was good.
Yeah, the music, one of my favourites. The song at the beginning and the end is Cat Stevens with an uncharacteristic kind of sound and a bit more psychedelic.
That's what I found from it. I listened to the song today, and it's a bit more psychedelic than his normal stuff. It's not Morning Has Broken or anything like that.
No, it's definitely not that. So, and then
when there's a...
In the film, when they're in
there's
Soho,
another band, isn't there?
It's the band Can, one of my absolute mm-hmm. favorites, German krautrock improvisational band. I absolutely love them. The fact that they're in this is amazing. Like, I love this band, but like, kind of nobody knows who they are. But they have got an album called Movie Soundtracks, because what they do is kind of perfect for this kind of film made in this kind of era. You know, mm-hmm. it's quite surreal. There's a lot going on. It's a bit psychedelic, but it's not psychedelic because it's not melodic, I think is what I mean. So it's perfect for these kind of films where somebody's losing their mind or their lives are unraveling or whatever, which I guess end of the 60s, early 70s, the effects of drugs taking a toll and stuff like that probably meant somebody like, who's that German band? We'll get them on with that mad music.
Yeah, definitely. I've been listening to them today as well, actually, because I hadn't heard of them up until today, you know, watching the film. But yeah, I've listened to the track from this Mother Sky. It's like 12 minutes long or something like that, but it's really, really good. And I've listened to a couple of the other stuff. And like you say, there's a lot of stuff that's been on other films and things like that as well. So people might have heard this stuff before, but probably not know who the band are. But yeah, the music fits and stuff like that as well, doesn't it? It's not like 60s sort of, you know, that type of stuff. It's a little bit harder, isn't it?
Yeah.
Especially when they go to the Soho and the sleaze and stuff.
Yeah, it's quite sleazy. It works for that, doesn't it? Because he's out of his depth. He doesn't really know what's going on. And also nobody really knows what he's doing because he's acting really erratically. So it really fits with the kind of, it's almost familiar, like all of those scenes of Soho, the cinemas and the sex shops and stuff like that, much the same as in Deathline last week. You know, you've seen that before on so many things, but the way it's filmed in this and the way the music goes with it and the way the guy's behaving in it, it all kind of fits. That's about halfway through the film. At the beginning, he gets this job. The lovely Jane Asher, Susan, showing him the ropes. You mentioned the performances before. I think Jane Asher is brilliant in it. She's I think she's perfect for this, and her performance is really good because she's this kind of beautiful English rose type who's kind of sweet. But she's also playing against type in the fact that she's a bit of a bitch, for want of a better word. Like
She's a bit of a cock tease, shall we say.
She's leading people on. She's having affairs with guys. But then there's also bits in it where you think she doesn't really want to be doing that. And she's like a bit kind of repulsed by the idea that she's doing it and that she's sexually promiscuous. But at the same time, she wants to, it's like she feels like she needs to be like, oh, I'm a strong woman. I can make my own choice. If I want to sleep with him, I'll sleep with him. It's a bit like she's somehow being forced into this counterculture, new feminist role rather than the norms.
I think that's right. I mean, obviously, you know, the 60s and stuff like that, sexual revolution, you know, the pill and things like that, isn't it? You know, women had a lot more freedom to do stuff like that. But I think she's realizing the way that she can manipulate or whatever people and get what she wants is through her sexuality and things, isn't it? Throughout the film. Yeah. And she does it, you know, pretty straight away. She does it to our young friend, doesn't she? She does it to Mike. And that's, so she kind of leads him on a bit at the start of the film. But she's definitely doing it for a reason. But I think you're right in what you're saying as well, that she's a bit sort of disgusted by it as well.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
especially this one. There's one particular character who is an ex-gym teacher, or he might still be a gym teacher, actually, but he also teaches in the swim baths, and he's like a massive pedo, isn't he?
He's horrible. Aye. So I think he's Mike, the guy's, is him, his former PE teacher.
Yes, that's right.
But then when he starts at the baths, he can see that he's taking this class of young girls swimming lessons, and it's... I mean,
it's horrible, isn't it?
At the time,
there are young kids.
It's meant to be. He's meant to be repulsive in it, but it's obviously meant to be that it's accepted. Watching it now, you're a bit like, how even did they make this scene? Because it's awful. He's like grabbing the arses of the like girls as he pushes them in the swim bath
and like pulling their tops down and stuff like that. It's
horrible.
It's awful behavior.
And she is also cheating on her. Like kind of fancy pants, young jet setter, go get a fiance
boyfriend.
This old guy.
Obviously you get the impression that she doesn't think much of her fiance or whatever. She's just with him because he's got a bit of dollar, hasn't he?
She kind of says that. I think, like, you know, it's all about the size of the engagement ring and all that kind of stuff. And he's got a fancy
and also.
Car.
that guy is a weirdo, isn't he? He's like Travis Bickle.
I mean,
he takes her out on a date and he takes her to like a sex Fulham.
Yeah.
Signs of sex or something. Yeah. Exactly like Travis Bickle does.
Yeah.
You know, what's going on?
And there's a bit where Mike goes to fight. And then after that, they go to like a kind of swingers bar or something. That's the bit in Soho where Mike tries to find them and he goes into the and he's asking the woman, have you seen a young couple come in here? And she's like, well, she's like giving nothing away. And he's like, you must have seen them. I saw them come in. He doesn't say the red-haired woman, like she's the only person in the entire film with like bright ginger hair. He says the horse-faced man.
He did say that. Oh yes, I think there was actually quite a horse-faced man who was in here earlier.
She says that.
She, she does.
You mentioned horse-faced. Yeah, come to think of it.
The thing is, with Mike, right? He's a 15-year-old kid. He's gone into this bathhouse. The amount of opportunities he has to have sex is unbelievable.
I know.
It's almost on full of my time.
It is a bit, this is the thing, it's like quite a serious film, but it's also funny. I think it's not laugh out loud funny, but the situations are quite funny. It's like obviously like kind of dark humor because it's there are serious messages in it as well, I think. But the bits where he's being propositioned by the older women in the bathhouse and this prostitute that he somehow manages to get his way in to see in Soho.
Or like, he stumbles into the prostitute thing, doesn't he?
They're funny. And but again, it's like he doesn't take advantage of any of these situations. Or he's kind of disgusted by them, even though you'd imagine most 15-year-old boys would have been probably in that job for that.
I mean, almost every woman in the Fulham propositions him or gives him the eyes at some point. You know, there's a woman on the desk who does it. There's the wonderful Diana Dawes, who we'll talk about in a little bit. While he's in Soho, like you've just said, he stumbles into this prostitute sort of boudoir. It's just like a door. But the best thing about that is that she opens the door by a system of pulleys. operates everything by a system of pulleys.
What do the other ones do?
One puts the record player on. The other
pulley. We find out why. Because because she like says, oh, come on. You know, you've taken me time now. And he tells her he's got £3 or whatever. She's like, you know. Yeah. And he goes, no, I can see you're like out of action. And she like lifts the blanket up and she's got a massive plaster cast on her leg signed by a West Bromwich Albion player.
He's good, him. I like him. West Bromwich Albion player. And why has he been to Soho?
Well, why has he been seeing her?
Exactly.
Then she's like, yeah, you know, I used to be able to charge a fiver, but I can only charge £2.50 now. And then she's like, come on, you've wasted me time. You've got some money. £3. And he's like, you just said it was £2.50. She's like, yeah, whatever. Then he runs out of that. So he runs out of all these situations. So as much as he's obsessed with Susan, but also it's being portrayed that he's so obsessed with her, he can't focus on all of these other sexual advances that are being made towards him. And that he's like, I couldn't possibly do that because she's the only person that I want. And he's almost kind of disgusted with the sexual advances in the same kind of way that Susan, I feel, is kind of disgusted with the way she acts with her sexuality in a way.
I guess if you see it, you know, they're doing these sort of strange things in the bathhouse and stuff like that. People have got that strange sexual peccadilloes, as you call them. So they're doing that. So they might see it as a kind of job. Do you know what I mean? And that's partly why they're disgusted. But there's another part where his ex-girlfriend suddenly turns up out of nowhere. And she's in there and she obviously propositions him as well and he turns her down. But if he had any sense, he would have just done that anyway and got Jane Asher a little bit jealous. Do you know what I mean? He should have done.
Also, she comes out of nowhere and she's like decided she's heard tell of his activities in the ladies' washhouse rooms. And she's like, yeah, I've heard what you get up to in here, so I've come to check it out a bit myself.
I've heard. The thing is, how's she heard? Because Mike has absolutely no mates.
He's a complete weirdo. So as good as Jane Asher is in this, and as good as she plays like this kind of complex character that plays with your ideas of who she is as well, and also plays with the idea of being, you know, Paul McCartney's girlfriend and stuff. I think, you know, she's in a mix of the swing and 60s stuff, plays on that. If at the time people would have known that. Mike is a total loser. He's a terrible actor. And somehow he's got all these women looking after him. Like, I've got no idea how.
He's
a terrible actor. That's unfair. The character is this kind of wet fish. And he's totally out of his depth. He's gone right into the deep end in his job, in his sexual adventures, and into his relationship or on-off relationship or pretend relationship with Jane Asher. The deep end metaphor encompasses everything that this guy's getting up to. But most people would just give it a go. Where is he?
Is a 15-year-old lad, right? If there's women flinging themselves at you, you ain't going to say no. There's no chance.
What is probably more realistic is, would you really know what the fuck you're doing if Diana does?
Yeah, you wouldn't. I mean, yeah, you'd be terrible. Probably not with Diana does. It would be fine. It would be fine. So there's that way of sort of looking at it as well, I guess, for sure. But the thing, because he does, as the film sort of goes on, he becomes more and more infatuated with Jane Asher's character. And he sort of spirals out of control, doesn't he? Becomes more erratic and stuff like that. Yeah. But the thing is, he remains ever so softly spoken and ever so polite.
Very polite.
Throughout his decline.
There's one big outburst where he does not act like that.
There's one, yes. There's one.
But, I mean, he's very well dressed for a young man of his age. He's got lovely hair.
He's got very nice floppy hair.
He is a good looking lad. But
he's
so softly spoken, but that's what I mean. He's a bit of a drip, I think, isn't he? Like, he's got the bad boy that Jane Asher seems to want, whereas really, like I say, I don't think she does. But there's a bit one of the first things that happens is the first client he gets in the ladies' changing rooms is 1970 Diana Doss.
Yes, and she is a wonderful woman, an absolutely wonderful woman. Up there, through my journey of trying to watch 70s horrors and stuff like that, she pops up in a couple of Amicus ones and things like that, and she's always excellent in the stuff that she's been.
She's very good.
I think she's the best thing in this film, to be perfectly honest with you.
Okay.
I mean, it's a bit sinister. Well, it's more than a bit sinister, really sinister.
Very creepy.
But it's like a cameo, so she's only in it for a little bit, but I think she steals it completely. I just think she's great.
And I think it's one of those, like, you know, Diana Doss was a big star well before this.
Pin-up, wasn't she?
A total pin-up, and this again plays on her being a bit past her best,
older.
which she was considered to be past her best because she was a blonde bombshell, and now she's in her 40s. She's not as kind of slim as she was before.
Yeah.
And she turns up as this obviously glamorous lady, but she's an older lady and gets straight in with Mike and decides she uses his head. What does she do?
She kind of just assaults him. And the reason that she's assaulting him is so that she can have an orgasm. But the strange thing about it is she keeps asking him if he's keen on football. Are you keen on football, Mike?
He doesn't seem like he's keen on football.
Well, originally he's quite keen on football, but after that he keeps saying that he's not. So she keeps talking about football and stuff like that, and there's a couple of times she tries to lock him into the room.
Yeah.
And I think she calls him into the room, you know, in the pretense of some kind of emergency.
He goes out and then he kind of gets away. He gets away from her and she pulls the red cord or whatever, and he comes rushing back in.
And she just grabs him while he's coming in, and she sort of like gets him in a bit of a headlock. Why are you looking at me tits and all this? She's saying to him,
she's like,
do you like Georgie best?
Forcing his head into her boobs. Like, essentially, she's using his head as a sponge for a
she completely assaults this poor boy.
But yeah, so she's going, oh, you like George Best? Yeah, I love George Best. Six goals against Northampton, like very specific, like yeah. real thing as
good
well.
Knowledge,
it really happened. Six goals against Northampton. Oh, he dribbles, and she's he shoots, and she's
he likes to slip it into the goal nice and softly. and then. But Mike gets his tenner tip, doesn't he? For his troubles and stuff.
So I remember her being in it, but I'd totally forgotten that it was about George Best. I just remember it being like her. But then we're talking about that bit of the prostitute later when the West Brom guy comes up. She's like, she says, oh, you're a football man. And she's got loads of like football team posters. Like pictures. It's really, really weird.
It is.
Why is this strange, like older woman like in football motif like popping up? I don't get it either.
I know the West Brom player signed a leg and stuff. It's just where's all this come from? It's a bit mad, isn't it? It's a bit mad. There's another cameo that I like in this, which is Bert Kwok.
Bert Kwok. You know what? I didn't know that was Bert Kwok, but obviously I presumed it was because he is that character in any like British film. An Asian guy. It's always Bert Kwok in this era.
I love Bert Kwok, mate. He's fucking brilliant. Class.
He is brilliant.
Because Mike's hanging around outside this sort of club that they've gone into, the swingers bar, and Bert Kwok is selling beef burgers.
Hot dogs.
Just outside. Hamburgers and hot dogs, they are. Mike doesn't go for the hamburgers.
No, he wants to go for the hot dog.
He wants to go for the hot dogs. Now, do you think six hot dogs is a bit too many to eat?
Honestly, I was pissing myself laughing by the end. Because he keeps popping up. He's like, hot dog? he's like, no, I couldn't possibly. He's like, no, it's on the house.
Yeah, the only line that Bert Kwok has is, would you like mustard on that?
Like mustard?
But it's weird. It's almost like a dream sequence.
It's a bit like. I think you do get into a bit where is this actually happening? Like a lot of these films we've talked about, you know, we've talked about American Psycho and all these films where you think, is this in that guy's head?
Yeah.
Or is it happening? Because
how on earth would
you keep coming out of that club and going, I'll have a hot dog, please? Six times in the same night, like without going, I know I've already ordered four, but to be honest, I just need to hang around here to see if these guys come out.
It's just mad that bit. It is like a definite dream sequence.
And it's the same, like I say, the bit where he goes in to see, stumbles into the room with our prostitute in, where she's on about the football and the Diana does, but it's all, there's bits in it that are like they're almost like mirror images, or it's the same thing, like repeating itself, like all the way through with different characters.
Yeah, well, the football thing and that. Yeah. I get that. That's clever. Yeah, definitely. And while he is hanging around this sort of club, he sees a cardboard cutout outside of a kind of peep show, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And it looks like Susan, so. He nicks it, doesn't he?
I was thinking about this was, I think I'm Mike at this point. I would have been running around London.
You've definitely got previous.
I would have been running around London with this thing thinking, fucking hell, is this the last that I fancy? Well, I'm going to take this home.
nicks it.
But then, so he's distraught. He's not excited by it. He's distraught, that this might be her.
He's angry, isn't he?
He's really angry. So he's trying to find her to like have it out with her. And in the end, he does. And this is the point. So she comes out with her boyfriend of this club. And he's trying to get her back to his. He keeps putting a taxi. He's going to 20 Tottenham Court Road, whatever the street that he's going to. Not that, obviously. And she's like, no, I'm just going to the tube station. He's like, come on, we're practically married. And she's going, no, I'm not coming back. I'm just going to go home. So of all of this thing, like they've been in these sex films, they're in this kind of weird sex club. At this point, and this is almost at the end of the film, she's kind of making it sound like she hasn't actually had sex with him, even though she's got promiscuous kind of human lifestyle.
She kind of escapes from the taxi, just shout the door and runs to the tube station.
And there's another bit where they go back to the house and she shuts the door and leaves straight away.
You get the impression that there's something going on behind that door. But then sort of Mike turns up because he's stalking them at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he's out of control at this point. That's very early in the film. He's already way crossing the boundaries far too much.
He definitely is.
And he tells a passing policeman that their boyfriend has propositioned him and tried to assault them. And the policeman...
he's trying to interfere with us.
Importune, that's it. Yeah. Importuning this gentleman.
Importuning. So, yeah, I mean, you never actually see any sort of sexual behaviour with Susan going on, do you? There's a part earlier in the film where she goes into the room with the pervy teacher and he puts a mirror under the door. Mm-hmm. See a little bit of, like, kissing and necking on and stuff like that. But he sets the fire alarm off, doesn't he, and stops all that kind of behaviour. So, yeah.
What's still on my head? Sorry.
Oh, no.
There's a lot of insects out here. I'm not enjoying it.
Goddamn moths. So you don't say anything. It's just implied. And I guess as a viewer, you're sort of thinking, well, she is promiscuous or whatever.
Yeah,
not
but
necessarily
I think
the case.
I think that's the thing. Like, she's going along with these things, but maybe actually she's not actually having sex with this guy, woman. And then he just confronts her with the thing and he's shoving it in her face. Is it you? Look at it. Look at it. Yeah. Is it you?
And she's saying, well, it looks a little bit like us, but you won't tell him whether it is actually.
And he's going, it's not you, is it? Because you're not like that. It's not you. You're not like that. And he's like kind of disgusted at the fact that she might be sexual, even though that's what he's interested in. It's very like this power play and this confused sexual ideas about what's attractive and what isn't is like going all the way through it and this bit. But then you've got these like old people on the tube and it looks quite real.
They look terrified, these people doing like, that.
The director's one of them, I think. There's a guy reading a Polish newspaper. That's the director.
That's right,
I think the newspaper's upside down as well.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
The other thing that in this particular bit, I was thinking quite weirdly that Deathline and this film could meet at
I thought that they went down
they're
into
at
the
Soho,
tube station. Yeah,
they're on the tube. They could have just met, couldn't they?
That's exactly what I thought.
If Mike and Susan had have just turned up in Deathline, it would have just been directly from this part.
Yeah, they could have missed that last tube and ended up with the cannibals.
They could have been never.
But they could be
know.
The young couple, you know, in Deathline easily.
It could be. It's definitely a link.
I thought that exactly the same. So he's going out of his mind. He's obsessed with her. He's stalking her, but she's still like leading him on, not so much sexually anymore, but she's got this weird thing where she'll like be nasty to him and then be like, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Come here, I'll give you a cuddle or whatever.
She's playing with these emotions, isn't she? There's also another bit where she's kind of spying on him getting ready and stuff.
Yeah.
So that indicates like some kind of sexual attraction there, doesn't it? Yeah. Or is she just doing it because it's a bit of a naughty thing to do? Do you know what I mean? You don't know, do you?
So you get this crazy scene in Soho. They end up like on this tube, goes out of hand. He loses his shit. He's throwing this thing around, shoving it in her face, saying, is it you? And then she's like, you better not turn up at the race tomorrow. And then there's a cross-country race in a park.
For no reason. I enjoyed this bit. I thought, what? It's Chariots of Fire. And he suddenly joins in with the race, doesn't he?
Like, I don't know what's his end game with this. I don't understand why he does it at all. But I just think he's totally lost
it. He's
lost it.
Yes, it's completely obvious.
The guy who has the starting pistol is the old PE teacher.
So, the thing is, he doesn't know how many laps to do, does he? So he does one lap and thinks that he's won. And then the rest of them keep running. The other weird bit about this is, say, Susan sort of gets a dog to come near her and then throws a snowball.
Very mean. I was upset with that. She's like giving the dog.
You're
like,
upset with Jane Asher.
She's like giving the dog these like nice eyes and like kind of playing it.
So she's doing it with the dog as well as doing it with Mike.
Fucking, she's horrible. Yeah. She's something not right with her. There's something not right with her. And then she smacks. Well, he ends up fucking bursting the tires on the PE guy's car. Uh-huh. So she's trying to drive it away. And like then as it swerves out of the way and she's like, what the fuck's going on? He just like jumps out. He's like, ha ha. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Either hide or like do something mean. Like you can't.
He's doing a bit of both, isn't he? So it's a bit like sort of off color. You don't know how to take, you know, how these people are behaving and stuff normal, is it?
It's not normal. And I think what is weird at this point, they end up now, they have about half an hour together as they try. She basically assaults him, like proper assaults him and smacks him in the face. And then again, it's just like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, you just sit in the fucking face. You can't just say, I'm sorry, like afterwards. But again, you know, she's also in this kind of abusive relationship with the PE teacher and all of this. And so she loses the diamond from her ring. It goes in the snow.
Yes, an expensive ring.
And what do you think the best way to find this diamond is?
There's some very strange situations in this film that I found. And this is one of them, whereby, because it's snowing at this point, isn't it? And the diamond ring drops into the snow. So what they decided to do was shovel up all the snow, put it in plastic bags.
Yeah. And take it to the swimming baths where they can melt the snow. Melt. They have to climb in the swim bath because it's not open.
It's empty, the swim bath as
it's
well.
Empty.
At this
the
point,
pool's
isn't it?
Empty because it's been emptied for the weekend. So they decide to melt the snow.
Yes. Using the electronic lights and also a kettle.
Well, the kettle's not plugged in, obviously. So they're using, they lower these big lights down that he has to wire up. He lowers the lights down and using the heat from the lights. Doesn't just melt the snow with the heat from the lights. No, he heats up the kettle with the heat from the lights so he can melt the snow with the hot water from the kettle.
Yeah, and then they decide to filter it through Jane Asher's tights as well. it's really weird and elaborate. I'm thinking, what are they doing?
Why have any of them thought this is the best way to do this?
Yeah, like, I've got a good idea. Do you think it's just a complete pretense to get her alone for as long as he possibly can?
I think it, I mean, it obviously serves the purpose of the end of the film, but yeah. I think in terms of the characters, they both have got no idea what they're doing with each other at this point.
Yeah.
Like, and I think this idea is also just stupid.
Yeah.
And I just, I can only assume it's just a continuation of the fact that they're both clueless about what they're meant to be doing with each other. And one of the things that I think is really interesting at this point is, so there's about half an hour of dialogue just between them two. It's the most boring dialogue in any film ever. It's so banal.
It's very natural, though. It's almost like it's improvised. I think it probably was.
And
it?
I think I read, like, he told them, like, just keep going. Like, if you mess up, if you think the scene is going well, just make up what you think should happen. Like, and I think what you get is this weird thing with those two. They're like bickering like a couple, like an old married, like people would say, oh, you're like a married couple, you two, the way you're bickering. Yeah. It's like, it is a bit like that. She's going, oh, give us it here. He's like, no, I'll do it. She's like, you sure you haven't lost it? He's like, I haven't lost it. Look, pass those over here. She's like, we'll strain it through this. He's like, yeah, I know, but wash your hands. And it's just all of this. It's like, it's dialogue that normally wouldn't be in a film because they're like, well, you don't need to say all of this stuff. You know, it would be cut out and just like the essential stuff in. And I think I think that's really clever to build up to the climax of the film in a really kind of boring way.
Because there's another bit where the teacher sort of turns up because he's wanting his keys back, you know, and I'm thinking, do we really need him to come back for his keys? I mean, they're already looking for this diamond through loads of snow, and then I've got this other problem to worry about, this fella turning up with his keys.
Yeah,
but I guess it does serve a purpose because Jane Asher gives him what for, doesn't she?
Yeah, she kind of explodes at this point, gives him both barrels. Look, you're a pervert, you know, if the only reason you want young girls is because they're the only people who'll be impressed by you, you know, you shit. Your wife probably hates you, but you can't get it up and all that stuff. And you make her sick. And she gives him it, and he just kind of just puts his hat on and just walks out while he's shouting out.
He wants to know where his keys are.
The keys are in his car. He should just look in his car.
He should look in his car. He definitely had they're just on
he
the
got
floor.
The car and just went, where are my keys?
Do you not think he should look in the car?
It's
no,
open.
I'm not going to.
She didn't lock it. The keys are inside.
Didn't lock it. Nah. In fact, Mike just kicked the door shut, didn't he? Flying kicked it shut. That's what
fucking idiot.
So, yeah, Mike eventually, through this elaborate way, does eventually find the diamond, doesn't he?
He does, and, so, you know, I'm having a go at it, but he does manage to get it.
He does find it, yeah. He does manage to do it. So he entices Susan, doesn't he, with he puts the diamond on his tongue, and he's sort of in the swimming pool that's empty of water and stuff like that, and he entices her into a sexual encounter, doesn't mm-hmm. he? He won't give her the diamond back. But he doesn't do very well, seemingly, does he?
A sexual encounter that does not fulfill anyone, I would say.
No, it doesn't. It's most certainly doesn't. Definitely doesn't. He doesn't seem to perform, does he?
He lies in a crumpled heap on top of her. But there's these like series, you can't really get a glimpse of what's going on.
Like a grasp, yeah.
You get these real close-ups of them that's going between them. You see a bit of her eyes, her lips, his eyes, like the back of his head, maybe her fingers in his hair and stuff like that. So you don't know whether it might be happening or might not be happening or whatever at this point. She says, don't worry about it afterwards. So presumably it hasn't happened for poor Mike. He's still confused about what he wants out of life. But I don't know whether you notice at one point there's a close-up of his eyes, right tight shut.
Which is the way you do it,
which
it?
Is obviously he's got one thing right with his technique.
One of the attendants, unbeknownst to him, the guy that fills up the pool, he doesn't know that they're in there, obviously.
A topless man,
he works in a boiler area. I think all those people should be topless, shouldn't they? It's a very hot place to be.
So he opens a valve and the pool starts to fill it up. And she's like, come on,
Mike. Check? Do you think he should check?
I think he should probably check. Just open it. Right, that's me done. See you later.
See you later.
See you tomorrow when the pool's full.
How long did it take to fill the pool?
He starts filling up and Susan's like, come on, Mike, we've got to go. And Mike, I think at this point, is frustrated with his performance or lack of it. And lashes out. He's like, no, don't go. Essentially, like, come on. I don't know what he thinks is going to happen because the pool's filling up. But he's so deluded and delirious at this point, he doesn't seem to notice that the pool's filling up rapidly. And he's got a lowered set of electric lights just above it.
Well, that's the thing as well. I mean, because he does sort of lash out rather dangerously at the end, doesn't he, with Jane Asher, and he swings the lighter and cracks her on the back of the head, doesn't he? And she sort of falls in the pool. But I was thinking, well, you know, they're going to die anyway if they stay in there, because surely they're all going to be electrocuted, aren't they?
Closer and closer to the thing. So, I mean,
the lights.
Kettle wasn't plugged in.
So it's sort of a throwback to an earlier scene where he throws the cardboard cut out into the pool and he sort of jumps on it and sort of tries to have sex with it. I don't know how you have sex with a cardboard cutout. But
especially
there you go.
Not in a swimming pool, it'd be fucking solid. It would be soggy for a start.
So then he does the same thing in that after scene, he cracks Jane Asher.
In that scene, again, it's quite surreal and it cuts. It's like her real body's there again, kind of showing that he can't distinguish between what's real and what's fantasy.
There's another surreal bit as well. I mean, there's quite a few, actually, but the one that I noticed where these bigger boys are sort of stripping off in front of Jane Asher and stuff like that, and she doesn't seem too bothered, but Mike is, and they push him in the pool. And as he's going into the pool, there's like, I'm not sure if it was Jane Asher, but there's because of the copy that, you know, we'll watch it on, but there's a naked woman sort of swimming under him.
Yeah.
Where'd she come from?
There's also a bit like where he's in that prostitute's place. There's a red-haired, long red-haired wig like on the wall,
right,
like, next to him. Like,
yeah.
You obviously think like it could be any woman wearing that, or you might get her to wear it or whatever, or it might just be this woman that you're following around trying to find is just, you know, somebody wearing a red-headed wig. It's not necessarily her. I think that's kind of a little signifier that was just lurking in the side of the shot as well. I think all of that stuff points to like a really creative filmmaker. I think the direction of it's great. I don't think it's a perfect film, but I really like it. It's you know, it's of its time, but I think it's because of it's not too familiar, it stood the test of time. I think, like, you know, it's not someone you'll have seen referenced so many times, or it hasn't been talked about too many times and ripped off and bits of it shown on shows and all of that kind of stuff. I think because of that, it's still fresh,
like, yeah, despite
being 51 years old.
What we got next? Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed that. I think I do have a quiz. This quiz is loosely about 60s It Girls. Okay. So I'm sure you'll get them all right because you love all that kind of stuff, don't you, Cliff?
Well, let's see.
Right, the first question is about Jane Birkin, singer of the sexy French tune, Je T'aime.
Yeah.
Right, so you know that one. Mm-hmm. The song made UK chart history in 1969, but do you know why?
Okay, I know it's banned, but I would imagine it's also like the first, I don't know if it got a number one because it got banned, but the first French language number one or something.
It's not that. The song was at two different chart positions at the same time.
Okay.
So the reason for that is one of the record labels that was out on, because of the controversy or whatever, took it off the shelves. So they brought it out with another record company. So it was in the charts twice.
Okay.
Even though it was the same song.
You know, the filthy Serge Gainsbourg.
Which singer caused controversy after being caught up in a drugs bust at Keith Richards' house, in which he was arrested wearing only a fur rug? I've left some other details out of that.
Yeah, the lovely Marianne Faithfull, still going strong.
It certainly is.
New album out this month, I think.
Next one, then, one of Andy Warhol's superstars, Eddie Sedgwick, was left devastated by which legend songwriter after their relationship ended because he forgot to tell her he was married?
Bob Dylan.
Yes, it is Bob Dylan. That was rather long-winded, that one, wasn't it? Jean Shrimpton was the world's highest paid model of the 60s. But what was her nickname?
Titch.
There's a clue in the name. Titchy. Look, she was quite tall, I think. Quite long-legged. She was called the Shrimp.
That's awful.
It's not a good name. That would
become a nickname.
It is. I wouldn't be too happy with that nickname if I was her. There you go. I think you did pretty well on that, actually. We've got music. This week?
Yeah, it's good.
I
don't know how this one came about. Some of your music magic.
Yes. I was just looking on Bandcamp and stuff like that. And this is from someone called Hanti. Mm-hmm. Do you think I've said that right?
I don't think so, but I also don't know how to pronounce it. So let's say yes.
Well, you know what? Like Kanti. It must be Hanti.
Yeah, let's say it. Good.
Right. So yeah, I was looking on Bandcamp and stuff like that, and I sort of stumbled across this. It's from Hanté, a French artist from Paris, actually, which is one of the highest selling artists on Bandcamp for electronic music. So it's pretty big, and I like this song. It's called Blank Love, this one.
Hanté with Blank Love. Thank you everyone for listening. We'll play that now. So until next time, take care. Goodbye. Don't go off the deep end.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.